All right. Hello and welcome to DIY for Business. It's Russ with you. Greg is, we'll just say he's on assignment. I'm joined today on DIY for Business with Blair Bryant Nichols, the owner of BBN Creative Management for Diverse and Mission-Driven Talent. Blair, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Tell me a little about what you do.
Yeah, so I own, as you mentioned, BBN Creative Management, where I coach and manage a wide variety of speakers, people who are either getting paid to speak or who are using speaking strategically in their businesses, overall with, you know, a strategy around how to best leverage and optimize speaking, both for direct and indirect revenue.
Okay, so you know the Seinfeld joke. People have probably told that to you, right? Like you'll have to know this one? Okay. All right. So he makes a joke that there was a survey done that people are more afraid of public speaking than death, which means, you know, at a funeral, you'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. That's I can do that in a Seinfeld voice, but I'll spare you. Public speaking, it's hard for people. It's not easy. How do you get over that fear? How do you help people get over that fear?
Yeah, well, I mean, like anything, it takes practice. So I understand it's still probably one of the biggest fears out there. I thought maybe we got a little bit more comfortable during COVID, at least with this sort of thing, like looking straight to camera, having to see ourselves talking right in front of a group that isn't necessarily right in front of us. So there's not that sense of connection. And I think people got a little bit better maybe in the presenting sort of way. But in general, yeah, it's still a big fear for a lot of people. And even seasoned veteran speakers still get nervous and might have butterflies, you know, before they go out on stage. I just think it's a natural part of human nature. I think the important distinction with speaking is that, you know, you shouldn't really think of yourself as there primarily to perform or be judged or critiqued. It's not the Olympics. It's not, you know, opening night of some, you know, theatrical performance. You're there to give a present, your expertise, your valuable information, and to hopefully connect with this audience so that you've left them in a better place than where they started. And, you know, I just find that a lot of that is mindset. Practice makes it easier to get up there and do it, just like anything. I mean, you're not going to get up on a ski hill and do it perfectly the first time. I certainly didn't, and now I don't ski. But other people, you know, you're going to need more practice. You're going to need time to just get comfortable if it's something that really scares you. Start with friendly audiences and practice on your own. It's not a bad thing, but, you know, you'll really not be able to substitute the experience of getting up in front of an audience of some kind. So if you're a business owner or you're an entrepreneur, you're someone that is coaching others, this is a great way to get out in front of those people. So I definitely would consider it if it's a fear that you have and how you can start to overcome it.
You know, you go to the gym and you've got the person that's motivating you to keep going, or an app that's motivating you to keep going, or whatever it is. How do you keep people motivated to get past those hurdles of like, this is taking forever, and the self-judging and the, maybe, you know, the self-doubt in it and all of that? How do you help people to do that? And what advice do you have for people that are going through that?
Yeah, well, and that's why a lot of times I work with, and you mentioned in my intro, specifically mission-based speakers or mission-based entrepreneurs, business owners, like purpose-driven people. I think a lot of people in this space or in the coaching space have that, you know, they consider what they're doing to be a calling. They have a reason to get out and speak. So if you're, you know, even though we're talking about all the business benefits and the upside, if you're not really passionate about doing this, I wouldn't do it, you know, even if it is going to be good for your business. Like, it should be something that even if it scares you, you're excited about, because you want to make an impact, because you want to approach your connecting with your clients or customers in a different way. And you feel like you have something valuable to say. So that's the part where, like, the ugly side of imposter syndrome, whereas usually when we think about imposter syndrome, we think everyone's going to find out I'm a fraud, and like, they're all going to, you know, laugh at me and realize that I don't know what I'm doing. But the other side of that is assuming that everyone else around you knows what you know, and you discounting your own, you know, genius. So by helping them understand that, like, look, what you know and what you talk about is really valuable, and what your experience and what you have done in your life is unique, and you need to be able to tell your story. And helping them see, though, you know, from outside of, a lot of times people spend this time in their bubble, in their departments, in their industries, in their companies, whatever it may look like. And they forget how much they might have to share with other people, people who aren't where they're at. So I think it's about helping them remember kind of how far they've come, what they've done, what they've learned, what they have to share, as well as remind them for their innate motivation for getting out there and speaking. And then making sure then that they understand, like, there's a strategic reason for them to do this. So what is the strategy? They feel like their time isn't being wasted. And then there's at least, you know, also a pragmatic side to it that can balance out, you know, like the emotional side that might drive them, you know, for other reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, not just stage, we're talking about Zoom presence, right? Mm-hmm. Like presence in, and by the way, you know, we're doing this on video. You have amazing eye contact. I will say that. You know, but then when you throw in Zoom, it just adds this extra element to it where, you know, there's, you know, you're not quite picking up on body language, or they have their camera off and you can't even see if they're paying attention, right? They could be reading a book for all we know. I don't know. Dealing with that, that's so, I guess I'm bringing this down into like really small audiences, things that almost every business owner has to do, of doing some sort of presentation in front of a client to present their business. Let's first talk about Zoom and how you're doing that online, and maybe like, do you see a big difference between doing that in person and online, and how do you help a business, you know, prep for something like that?
Yeah, well, I think you're always, there is just something in physical connection that will always create a, you know, a stronger connection with when you meet with someone in person. I think we all kind of follow generally those rules of like connecting on email or phone, and then maybe setting up a video call, and then eventually maybe going out to lunch or something. But you can really accelerate connection by being in front of someone in a physical space. So both as a speaker, as, you know, as an expert, and getting in front of that room where you can use storytelling to connect emotionally to that audience, you can do the same thing online. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can use technology, but more important than anything is the storytelling element of it all. So whether you're on Zoom and meeting a customer for the first time or talking to a bunch of them, you don't want to just like, okay, here are my slides, let me tell you about my product. Like, you want to tell a story. You want to evoke an actual emotional connection to what you're talking about. Like, this is just like for salesmen, for anyone who's wanting to leverage this. And like what I coach in my keynote, like with my clients, with their keynotes, is you always open with a story and close with a story. And then in the middle is where you share value. And like three quarters of the way through, before your closing story, that's where you can share, you know, the QR code or the, you know, text this number and get the free resource. And now you've got them all on your email list and right where you want them. And like, you know, then you can leave them with, you know, that emotional connection. And that's how they remember you. And that's how you make a lasting impression, you know? So those are kind of the different ways to approach it.
So if I compare this to email marketing, right? Email marketing is all about the list, right? It's you got to have the right list and you got to have the right message for the right audience. When you're assembling, let's say, a keynote, do you see a lot of tweaks that have to be made, or a lot of last minute adjustments, maybe improvising on stage to change something, fix, you know, your message so that it fits for the audience?
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, the best keynoters are tailoring their talks to their particular audience. You know, they want to know that you understand who they are, that you're applying, that this can be applied to them, and that, you know, they have a connection if they feel seen and understood. So some of my clients, you know, will interview several employees before a keynote so that they can really speak the language and include whether it's company anecdotes or jargon, et cetera, refer to them by the proper titles so they are not giving examples that really don't apply, and et cetera, things like that. So I think that customization is really important, but at the end of the day, it's probably no more than 20%, you know, that you're hiring this person for their expertise. Like, a lot of what they're come to say is going to be, you know, what they share typically in their keynote, but they're always going to, you know, well, not always, the good keynoters, if they ask a lot of questions when you talk to them, hopefully they're really interested in the audience, what your objectives are for the event, how you want the audience to feel, or what you want them to do differently. A lot of different, like, kind of thought-provoking questions that they may ask so that they can set the right tone, leave them with the right energy, kind of understand where they're at, even in the agenda. So they might need to turn it up or down, depending on that. And they will, you know, the best speakers will kind of adjust and, you know, modulate to the audience and in a way that I hopefully feels authentic. And that's all part of the gig, right? You know, that's your 45, 60 minutes and you're controlling their attention and the energy and, you know, what you do with it is up to you.
Right. And I've done improv. I've done stand-up comedy. I'm comfortable on stage. I'm okay. Man, with that. Yeah. Doing the, you know, the improv thing. I started working with a different group and, you know, getting to know the audience is part of it. Right. So to make myself feel more comfortable and to know the audience a little bit more, basically I walk around and greet people as they're coming into the room. I chat with people and say, oh yeah, I'm doing improv tonight. One of our scenes is going to be about a first date. Can you tell me about a first date that you had? Get all these little seeds planted in my mind. And I try to bring those into the improv scenes. It's a technique too, to make myself feel comfortable on stage. Because I've already had a conversation with everybody one-on-one before I jump onto the stage and actually go out and do something. So I've started also doing that if I'm doing sort of like some sort of business presentation, just work in the room a little bit beforehand and, you know, spend a couple minutes with everybody. And I feel like, you know, that also helps to, you know, them to get to know me. It takes off some of the pressure of going on stage and they're seeing me for the first time. Have you ever done a technique like that?
Improv is a super valuable skill, super great if you're going to do any sort of, you know, like presenting or speaking, et cetera, especially if you want to be like an MC moderator, like you got to be so good with that, like improv, thinking on your feet, you know, being able to like pivot if something's going wrong or delayed, being able to vamp and all of that. And you know, it's, you know, to your point about like the difference between in-person versus virtual, so many of our sales calls, same thing, you know, sometimes it's hard. It's just like, kind of like, you just feel like you got to jump right in. Like everyone's busy and like, we're here to discuss these details and, you know, be pleasant, but we're not really like, you know, whatever. But I generally can connect because I've lived all over the country just because of my life and my family's life and everything. So I can usually connect over geography or something shared in that sense. So I usually ask people where they're from or where they're at. And, you know, we can talk about that and, you know, at least have that kind of shared connection, see where it goes. And then if nothing else, like, I feel like we know each other more on a human level, whatever assumptions you may have about what I first say when I say where I'm from and vice versa, like go out the window. And then, you know, it's at least something to build a bridge on. But I would totally agree, like live in person, it'd almost be, you know, it'd be rude if you're like, all right, jumping right in. But sometimes meetings are like that. Sometimes people are like that. They just don't really leave room for some humanity. And, you know, I think people need that and will, of course, make you stand out. But what I also know is, to my earlier point, I work with a client who advises, you know, top level architects on telling great stories because they're bidding multi-billion dollar, you know, projects, and the other firm is going to have the same budget, the same sort of thing. But so it comes down almost to an emotional decision, and how they've been winning some of these big contracts have been through telling better stories and connecting with their clients that way.
Improv is supposed to be like you're just coming up with stuff, right? But all improvisers have this database of jokes in their head of things that they know that are going to work, that if they, you know, like these little crutches that you can fall back on just in case. And I feel like those are important too when doing any kind of public speaking. I did an event out in Las Vegas, and you know, I'll break the rules of Vegas and share the story. Right before I went on stage, the entire PowerPoint thing just didn't work. You know, the AV team was like freaking out. You're seeing people running around and, you know, whatever. And then, you know, I had the lapel mic, doesn't work. Like something just completely. So they hand me a handheld mic. I went on and I, you know, joked about it. I'm like, so, you know, the location really didn't want me to give this speech because they know I'm going to give you some amazing secrets about your digital marketing presence and they don't want you to know it. It's probably your competitors. You know, like I just made up some stupid little thing and it totally worked and people were like laughing about it. And, you know, they were totally, you know, engaged in the conversation because I did that. the next speaker that came up was completely flustered, and just, you could tell it in their voice. You could tell it in their, you know, tone, and you could tell they were so upset. I did great business at that meeting. This other person, I'm assuming they probably did not. What do you do in those types of situations? Because something is always going to go wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you did is the thing. It's like, you've got to be prepared. You got to have a plan B, C, D. And as a speaker, you know, you got to be able to go on without slides. You know, like AV should not be a mandatory. Like, I think, again, some of the best speakers don't use any slides. A lot of times it makes sense and you want to have visuals, or you want to be able to show infographics or things that back up. I don't like text heavy slides. I don't like slides with a lot of text that you're also been just reading to us. And it's kind of like, it's
I can do that. Waste.
It's kind of wasting, you know, like some of your time there too. So I think it's a good example of how, you know, relying too much on, okay, I'm going to be able to see my slides and notes, and just not preparing without that. Now that guy lost a really valuable opportunity. 30 minutes of that kind of stage time, like you said, you did a lot of business. But what I will say is, like, you know, you always need to be prepared to, like, I talk to people about embedding, of course, a QR code or something into their presentation so you can capture that contact information immediately when they're really hooked into you and people are getting 80 to 90% of the audience, which you typically are not getting that sort of, you know, follow through or conversion on opt-ins that much from an audience. So, you know, you might miss that opportunity, but then be prepared to have something else, you know. And what a colleague taught me that still works even in this digital age: if you have a clipboard, if it's not the biggest audience in the world, if it's a couple hundred, few hundred, whatever, pass around a clipboard. It's social. People feel bad if they don't write down their emails too. It's like social kind of pressure to pass it along, write your name and email. And it's old school, but you'll get those leads, you'll get those contacts, if nothing else. And otherwise, you know, always have like maybe a backup, like the QR code outside of the deck to be able to share, just so you can still follow through. Your main objective when you're speaking, when you're out there, whether it's on a podcast like this or whatever, is to keep filling your email list, which are hopefully leads for all your different products and services, or to directly sell your products and services. Anything right. else, like if you're getting paid to be there, then yes, but you should still be trying to get that audience onto your email list, because that's where a lot of speakers, especially the ones who do it for corporate, more in that B2B space, I know that they've left millions and millions, if not billions of dollars on the table, because they have just been focused on like doing those dozens of gigs a year, getting nice payments, when they could have been growing that, scaling that, cutting back on the travel they have to do, charging more, all of the above. If they had thought about more of a consumer strategy along the way too.
There's one thing that you mentioned too, podcasting, right? Guesting on podcasts. I've had podcast guests. They help out people. They, you know, give a lot of great tips for everyone. And then there's some podcasts that I haven't aired that I just like, I do the interview and I just like, you know what? I'm not going to run this one, or I'm going to chop it up and just use a little bit of it and, you know, chop it down to 10 minutes instead of a 40 minute or whatever. You know, the reason why I do that is because they essentially turn it into an infomercial.
Right.
How do you balance the sell versus the delivery of free information? And, you know, how do you make those two line up so that you are going to get leads but not turn it into an infomercial?
Yeah, well, I mean, you shouldn't be able to cover everything that you might talk about, coach about, do in 45 minutes, you know, so that you should think about what that 45 minutes is best used on. It should that. And I'm just talking about that as like a standard keynote time, right? Like just any keynote time you're filling, you know, it is kind of like a first date. You're trying to introduce yourself. You're trying to get people ultimately to know, like, and trust you so they'll work with you. So in this part, you're introducing yourself. You could probably get them to know and like you just by telling a story and sharing valuable information. So to your point, you really want to avoid coming out there and just jumping into your work and your packages and like the going like case study by case study or whatever that looks like. You want to be giving a valuable information to share that hopefully will give people like actionable things that they can start doing, or, you know, give them new perspectives of things that they can start thinking about. because the underlying message should be, obviously, I could help you do this faster. I could help you support you in these things. These are the sorts of things that when you're doing a keynote, it's like the DIY version. It is almost like the, you know, like the YouTube video version of this topic for someone, but it should only be like the preface to your book. It should be kind of like, you know, the long essay on your work that gets people to want to read the book, the longer pieces. So I think people often feel like they need to condense everything they know about this topic into 45 or 60 minutes. And that's not really helpful.
Right.
If you can just help this audience, like learn one new thing, walk away with like, this is the motivation I need to do. I need to pay more attention to digital marketing because X, all of the above, but et cetera. So I think you just really got to think about like how you consolidate and how you use that time just very strategically to connect to that audience. And then that's how you can continue to grow them and move them along, you know, your pipeline, whether it's from the talk to a digital course or your book or a webinar, a workshop, or and also, you know, to potentially more.
Like there's a big shift in how you're presenting and what you're saying when you're talking to a B2B audience versus a B2C audience versus also like maybe a peers audience, right? Like a business group. Do you want to talk about those different audiences? Is there anything like maybe some little tips for those various audiences?
Yeah. Again, I think it's about adapting to whatever audience, whatever the venue is. You know, the bigger the audience, the more it's going to be you on stage and less you know, probably interacting, and like, that's okay. But some of the best audiences you could have would be like 8 CEOs in a room that one could be like a major client for you or something. So then I think you want to make it a little bit more intimate, a little bit more, you know, interactive and keep them engaged, you know, with what you're doing because you have that opportunity and it's not going to feel as interesting just to be talked at, you know, in a smaller environment like that. But I think that kind of just depends on the speaker and what they're there to do. Oftentimes the format is less important in this setting than like the time they're allotted and how, you know, what they want to do with that. So if there's more time, it's more of a workshop. It innately becomes more interactive and more facilitated. And if you don't have as much time, you're just not going to be able to do as much on the activity side. So it's just going to be, you know, a talk in one way or another. But it's important, I think, as a speaker to have those different options to show the different variety of things you can do and also seek out those different types of opportunities and not limit yourself or think only about stages, conferences, expos, whatever that looks like to you, but also, you know, even masterminds and small gatherings and, you know, your local bank's leadership retreat and all of the above. So that's fertile ground for a lot of people, I think, especially in the coaching space.
Hey, you know, one of the things that I, in running my business, I would always tell anybody that I would bring on, I would tell them that everyone is a client, right? So I actually did an entertainment business for 15 years where, you know, I had people, you know, hired people that would go on stage, that they would, you know, MC an event, DJ an event, you know, bands, things like that. One of the things I would always say is everyone is a client. I always felt like if you treat everybody as a client, you will get more clients. You know? Like they will get a little taste of what it's like to work with you. So I even think like when you're on stage, if you're treating everyone like they are a client, it is a win.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned and from listening to a lot of other stories and tales from the entertainment world and entertainment industry, that the people who've worked and worked and worked their whole lives are the ones who are great to work with. You know, the biggest movie stars are also like some of the hardest working, most professional people. Talk about Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and how amazing they are and how friendly they are. And they know everyone's names and they don't act like divas and jerks. And the ones that do, you don't end up seeing as much and they don't last. They don't stick around. People don't want to work with them. It's not that there's no jerks left in Hollywood. Like, let's be honest, but it's just that often happens to people if they let their ego run away with them. And I think that's really important for speakers to hear. I love saying that and reminding them of that. Like, you know, once you're on site, the speakers who are great to work with, friendly, you know, to all the AV people, like, you know, being nice to everyone and just acknowledging people, like, are definitely, like, all of those people are influencers to decision makers. They're working events, like, they are in that space, and they talk just as much as anyone else in the industry talks about who was hard to work with or who they didn't like. And people listen to that. Like, they're interested in that because the event planner's not there for every interaction, every discussion. And I've actually had lost clients, lost more business because of how speakers have behaved on site. And when, and I mean, they were in the hallway screaming at their assistant on the phone, not even how they treated anyone at the company, but they also, they didn't appreciate that behavior at all in general. And like, fair enough. So I'm saying, like, you're right. And like, not just everyone's your client, but you, when you're on site, you are on site, on call,
you're on stage
until you get back in that car, and you better hope that the driver is friendly too. And then you better keep your, otherwise keep your mouth shut until you're in your hotel.
Exactly. Totally. I mean, it's gotta be that way. And and I mean, it helped me where, you know, I would get on, you know, vendor lists of locations because they knew we were the friendly ones.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in radio for years and I got to meet all these, like, you know, like random celebrities. And I remember the ones that I had pleasant conversations with. For instance, Celine Dion, right? So we were doing it was her birthday and we were doing a concert and it was her birthday weekend. So we decided, let's have a cake for her and we'll do a little party and we'll see if we can make this happen. So the radio station, you know, worked with her people. We made it happen. We did a little backstage party for her and we invited a bunch of listeners to this. And we had a Celine Dion cake with her album cover on the front of it and all that stuff. It was really cool. Celine Dion worked the room. She literally went to every single person and shook their hands, hugged them, every single person. She was so nice. Concert was amazing also. She was fantastic on stage. Her stage presence is amazing. Now, of course, she's there to sell albums. Like, that's the whole purpose of the concert. That's the point of, you know, doing a lot of what she was doing that night. What kind of results, though, are you seeing on the business side? Let's get back to the business side here, and I'll stop telling my celebrity stories. What are the results your clients are seeing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the more you speak, the more you'll speak. So anytime you're out there speaking, it's likely will lead to more speaking opportunities. It definitely, you know, helps build that momentum that can snowball if you get out there in front of, especially the right audiences. You know, you can be very strategic about who you want to reach. You can be strategic about what your message is and how you're getting those people to fill your funnel and move them along. I think it comes down to what I love, the strategy. You know, if you're doing this with intention and you're not just trying to throw things out there to figure it out, I think it can be a very valuable use of your time and resources. And you can really move people along that trust curve, that buying curve, that sales decision curve by being that third party expert, by connecting with them emotionally through storytelling and do so much more than just networking at an event or having a booth at an event or doing some other sort of sponsorship. You want that credibility that comes with being a thought leader. You know, you want that credibility and that opportunity to connect with all of those people at once from stage than trying to have to doing it one by one. And also just being smart again about what mechanisms you have in place to capture as many leads as possible and nurture them and move on from there. So it becomes such a virtuous cycle for your business. You know, it doesn't have to be something you're doing every day, but the more you're doing it, the more you're feeding hopefully your funnel, the more that you'll see the results either in the product and service sales that you'll see or in additional speaking invitations and other opportunities.
And, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, there's paid speaking opportunities as well that happen. Do you have any of your clients that are going that route, that are going to the paid speaking?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, I work with lots of paid speakers and that's been more of my world in the last 18 years than even like this more strategic speaking or this more kind of sponsorship driven speaking, et cetera. So the paid world is always going to be a big part of it, but I'm all about, you know, again, maximizing, optimizing that. I think that even in a corporate audience, there's an opportunity to convert that audience into potential direct customers and always be thinking about the next B2B opportunity with them on, you know, even in a paid opportunity. So I think a lot of clients are looking for growth and they think that that just means booking more talks. And I'm talking about true scaling and true sustainable growth through, you know, taking advantage of your speaking to sell products and services that you might not even, you know, have yet or have figured out, or you've got that piece and now you need the other pieces to add to it. And that growth, I'm not like excited by speakers that growth only looks like more gigs, when growth should look like ultimately less gigs that you get paid more for,
yeah,
and that, you know, scale into much bigger figures for you than, right, than a keynote, right, fee alone.
So if somebody listening would like to get a hold of you, get some coaching, some assistance, how do they do so?
Yeah, awesome. You can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram, Blair Bryant Nichols and BBN Creative Management, and also my website, bbncreativemanagement.com. And you can sign up for a free 30-minute call. I'll talk to you, answer your questions, and share hopefully some ideas on what your next best step can be.
All right. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All of the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we are happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. If there's an area of your business where you need some solid business advice, let us know and we might be able to book an entire episode just around that topic and get your questions answered. You can reach out to us by visiting our website at diyforbusinesspodcast.com. The link is in the podcast description. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.